Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk radio stations across the country, a place where we're not afraid to dig in. Is the government going to have to take over oil refineries to address a crisis in gas prices? Tara Servatius at WORD Radio thinks so if California moves forward on efforts to create a profit cap. Analysts say the move would likely cut down the supply of gas in the western U.S. and lead to an increase in prices to as high as $10 a gallon. So we'll bring you plenty of red meat today, but let's start with Tara.
Okay. Well, we're here in California. They must be so excited.
Oh, I'm sure.
No, they're not. They're getting what they want. And what did they want? It's what they voted for. $10 a gallon gas. Gavin Newsom is about to achieve this, Lee, because the two big oil refineries in the state are shutting down. Why? Because of Gavin Newsom's regulations. Shock is ensuing. Well, we can't afford that. Well, what were you going to put in your car?
Yeah, exactly.
What was your plan there? And we're getting the answer, Lee. You and I have always wondered, like, when the lights go out, what will be their reaction? Will they be happy they're going to have to live in a cave, like a caveman? Or will they want the lights back on? I mean, it's so strange, these people. But it's happening. And get this. You know who they're blaming? Regulators.
Well,
the regulators carrying out the Gavin Newsom regulations they voted for.
Yeah, where do you think those regulations came from?
The governor you voted for, who yeah. ran on it. Okay, here's...
And the legislature, too.
And the legislature. Very good. Here's the local television news. It's KCRA describing this disaster they have created.
Governor Gavin Newsom's administration was in the hot seat today as California is set to lose two oil refineries within the next year. Those closures will come after the governor and his administration pushed and successfully passed new regulations on the oil industry within the last few years.
Now, lawmakers are now worried how this is going to impact California drivers and their cost of living. KCRA 3 Capital correspondent Ashley Zavala takes a closer look at what could be next.
And this is the governor that's probably highest on the list of potential Democrat presidential candidates. Try running on that.
$10 a gallon gas. Folks, and I only bring this up. I know you don't care about what goes on in California. I don't either. But this is what the Democrats are doing nationally. This is how this will end. This is exactly. Okay. So listen to this. All right. I'll just play it. This is comedy gold. They're all these people you're about to hear from are Democrats, from the regulators to the representative from San Diego, outraged that their policies are working to deliver to them the necessarily skyrocketing energy prices they love.
Democratic lawmakers signaling they may be losing trust with some of these agencies.
I know that what climate leadership does not look like, and that is $10 gas. You have a president.
California's clean air push facing pushback from both political parties. Lawmakers worry state regulators have kept drivers, workers, and Californians overall as an afterthought as two oil refiners prepare to shut down within the next year. Those two account for about 20% of the state's oil refining capacity. Lawmakers grilled the leaders of the state agencies that regulate the oil and gas industry, including California Air Resources Board Chair Leanne Randolph, Vice Chairman of the California Energy Commission Siva Gunda, and the Department of Petroleum Market Oversight Director Ty Milder.
We have a crisis on our hand that may have been self-created by the actions that perhaps have been taken by the state, by regulators.
Democrat liberals, progressives are finally facing the consequences of their policy. That's what's happening here.
And they don't like them, but I thought this is what they wanted.
It is exactly what they wanted. Exactly what they wanted.
They're like children.
Democratic Assemblyman David Alvarez and others frustrated after they were swayed to approve some of the latest regulations put on the oil and gas industry.
I think I also heard you say that another closure can lead to a significant increase in cost to consumers on the price of gas.
Yes, sir.
They're saying $10 a gallon gas.
So what are you going to run those cars and trucks on? Is it going to be, fairy dust and unicorn poop? I mean, is that what you're going to run it on?
I don't think they know. I don't think they do. You know what probably the big part of the problem here? Again, when your media lies to you, obfuscates, and leaves out critical details, that's how you end up here. Thinking, oh, good, we're cutting fossil fuel. Okay, but what are you going to replace it with?
Right.
Uh-huh. That part gets left out. They just don't report it. So, yeah, that's going on. Now, listen, this is the best part. This is the best part. They're facing the horror of having to get this ship in their oil. Not only will that cost a ton of dough, they're going to have to buy it from overseas. Not only will that cost a ton of dough, leading to the $10 a gallon price, but they're going to have to pollute, the ships are, in order to get the oil to them. Oh, this is comedy gold out of California.
Gunda told lawmakers California will likely need to have oil imported from other parts of the world by ships.
So we really have only one choice there today, which is, you know, increasing imports. Based on our work right now, that will be very tight for the North.
Increase in imports, which means that you have more vessels who what I've heard also, if you increase the vessels, then that means more emissions because we don't control those vessels and the emissions in which they bring. Is that correct?
But you are correct that additional marine traffic would implicate air quality issues beyond state waters that we do not regulate.
Now, this was just an informational hearing, so no action was taken. It's unclear exactly what the next steps will be, but Governor Newsom's administration is still apparently trying to come up with a plan to deal with those two upcoming refinery closures. Reporting at the state capitol, Ashley Zavala, KCRA 3.
Here's an idea. Don't close them. Great.
Yeah, but that would make sense, though. Democrats never do anything that makes sense, Lee. So that's options obviously off the table.
Now you see why folks are leaving California?
Oh, yeah, but this is the national policy. This is actually our national energy policy right now. I mean, we have Doug Burgum, God bless him, is running around and seeing, look, the lights are going to go out Spain style if we keep cutting coal. We used to have 40% of our energy when Barack Obama took office was coal. It will be zero by 2030. We are still on that track. He said literally the lights are going to go out in the factories. So we're still facing this just in a different way. Okay, now you're going to love this part, okay? Because how many years have I been talking about this? How many Battleground America podcasts have I done on this? That the real reason these Democrats did this, right, was so that they could use the dry pumps, no gas in them, what gas there is costs $10, the panic that induces to confiscate and take over means of production. What did I tell you? And here it is. In this Daily Caller article today, they are considering taking over the refineries, the government is. In other words, confiscating them to fix this disaster.
So you outlaw or overregulate something to where it goes out of business so that you can then steal the business from the legitimate owners.
You got it. That's how it works.
Now, welcome to your Marxist, socialist, communist state of California.
Yep. The California Air Resources Board, California Energy Commission, and Division of Petroleum Market Oversight, they're talking about what they're going to do. They're saying that the government may take these refineries over and run them themselves. Now, how did I know that was coming? My Battleground America listeners right now are saying, Terry, you're a genius. You're practically psychic. You should work at the Psychic Network. But no, I'm not. No. I read it in the New York Times. June 2nd, 2022. Every American should read this article. The headline is, you want to buy meat in this economy. What is it? It talks about how Biden should go ahead and declare a climate emergency, which he did, and I think they were going to do this part in the Kamala Harris or in the second term, because we have something called the Lever Act at the federal level, and that allows the federal government to seize means of production for energy and food in a national emergency or in a war. It's been used before, believe it or not. It was passed in during World War II, and they did. The federal government actually did at one point. People don't know this. And they determined what foods, including what you could buy, what days of the week. And the New York Times wanted Biden to go ahead and do it again.
But when Trump declares a national emergency because of illegal immigration or because of unfair trade practices, Democrats sue to stop it. Nobody sued to stop the Biden administration from declaring the climate crisis, so-called climate crisis, a national emergency. Nobody sued there.
No. No, not at all. Nobody cared. Everybody was, wait, no.
No federal judge issued an injunction to stop this from happening.
No, that's exactly what they're doing. So you're seeing the blueprint in California. They create a crisis, drive gas prices up to $10. Even Democrats are screaming, and now they're saying we're going to take over the refineries. By the way, you want to know who this strategy comes from or where it comes from and how I know they'll do it? They've been doing it since 1848 when Marx published the Communist Manifesto.
Good old Karl.
Yeah, no, that's what they do. From Ukraine to the Soviet Union. China did this very successfully. Take over food, take over fuel, use it to control the population, starve people to control them. That's what Marxists do. They don't even have another playbook. And here it is in the New York Times. In 1917, months after the country entered World War I, Congress passed the Lever Food and Fuel Control Act, which granted the government sweeping power over the food supply. And they were, in 2022, saying Biden need to go ahead and take control of the fuel and food supply. It's already happening in California. It's the nationwide template, folks. We can either live through Ukrainian, Chinese, or Russian-style famine, or we can vote for people who aren't crazy. Your choice, but you're watching The Blueprint right now in California.
Is Dr. Jill Biden guilty of elder abuse? Is Congress guilty of failing to invoke the 25th Amendment when it came to former President Joe Biden's lack of ability while he was in office? And just how scary is it that he had the nuclear codes? Or did he? Rich Zeoli tackles it all next.
You know what's amazing about all of this is that the Democrats keep screwing up badly. I mean, obviously, and they're terrible. And yet the judges keep jumping in and distracting everybody from all of the horrible things that that they're doing. So I am of the opinion that these judges right now are purposely just trying to slow things down to get to midterms. Everybody is just trying to slow things down, and they can see the other side of this, because it's getting to a point now where you really can't count on the Republicans in Congress to get the job done. We see that right now with the One Big Beautiful Bill. And instead of us talking about that, we're talking about judges. And instead of us talking about how horrible the Democrats are, we're talking about judges. We're talking about court orders and rulings. Now, these court orders and rulings are going to eventually, in my opinion, go the president's way. But the goal here is to slow all this down, and the goal here is to take attention off of everything that the Democrats are doing wrong. And that's a key part of this, because the Democrats are screwing up everything. And I mean everything. Let's think about the whole Biden scandal for a second, which is what I was supposed to talk about on America Reports a few minutes ago. So we have all this information that's coming out about doctor, and you always have to say that by law, Dr. Jill Biden, and how she knew that her husband had dementia. I mean, obviously, how could she not? And she knew he had cancer, and yet she kept him up there. She propped him up, and everybody's pointing at Dr. Jill. But please don't get distracted by that fact, because she had no legal authority here to do anything. Nothing. I mean, there's no role in the Constitution for a first lady. It's nice, or a first gentleman, or a first gumata, or in Kennedy's case, the ninth gumata, whatever. There's no constitutional role for this. So while Jill Biden is guilty of elder abuse, she's not guilty of committing an offense to the United States Constitution. And that's important to note. However, the same cannot be said for the vice president of the United States of America at the time, Kamala Harris, nor can it be said for the members of the president's cabinet, who had a constitutional responsibility under the 25th Amendment to remove the guy who had control of the nuclear codes. You may be of the impression, which is totally understandable, that if the president orders a nuclear strike, there's a sequence of events that happens, and it includes somebody having to say, yeah, I agree. I don't know. Maybe you think that. I'm always, as a kid of the 80s, I remember War Games. You remember the opening scene of War Games has the two guys in the missile silo? And the missile silo, the one guy orders the other guy to turn the key and launch the missile strike, and then the other guy doesn't do it, and then he points a gun at him, and then it turns out that it was actually not, you know, like the missile, they should have launched, but it was a test or something, I don't know, whatever it was. So they replace all the guys in the silos with the Whopper, the computer. And the whole point of War Games is that here's this kid, Matthew Broderick, who hacks into the Whopper, and he's able to play this game, how about a nice game of chess, and next thing you know, they're playing global thermonuclear war. Okay. I think some people assume that when the president decides to launch nuclear missiles, that there's another guy who has to turn the key at the same time. That's not how it works. In fact, it's kind of symbolic in that movie in the sense of they take the guys out of the equation of the nuclear missile silo. And they replace them with a computer because the human error aspect of it. The whole point is that these nuclear missiles can travel incredible speeds. And I have no idea, and none of us really do, how fast they're really capable of going in this day and age because it's all classified now. But we know that they can travel very, very quickly. And we know that the whole point is for the president to be able to react before we're decimated. So that's the whole goal. They create this system in the 1950s after we drop bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki to figure out, okay, what do we do in the event of global thermonuclear war? And what they figured out was, hey, we don't have time for a vote. We don't have time for a debate. We've got 15 minutes, maybe, till their missiles hit our missiles and wipe out our ability to do a counterstrike. So we don't have time to debate. We don't have time to get a vote. We don't have time to bring the cabinet in and sit around the room and let everybody, you know, express their feelings. We have to make a decision. Because the fear is always that, at the time anyway, the Soviets will launch their entire nuclear missile supply. They'll aim them for our silos, and then we have nothing to hit back with, and then they control the world. So you have to have the president have the ability to say, strike, unload, unleash everything. And what you can't have is somebody who goes, but Mr. President, what if it's not really real? Like, what if it's a game? What if it's a kid playing a game? Now, in War Games, they take the president out of it. For the purposes of the drama, of the effect of the movie, the president is not in it. So it's this guy who's in charge of NORAD who ultimately has to make the decision. And that's where the movie, in my opinion, does not live up to the reality of the situation. Because it's the president's call and ultimately the president's call. And I'm pretty sure at the end of the movie, although I haven't seen War Games in a while, he's on the phone and the president's looking to him for advice. And he tells the president, you know, we should stand down. So maybe I'm not giving War Games its proper due. And maybe it is accurate in that sense. And I just have to rewatch it. But you get my point. The guy at NORAD doesn't have the ability to say to the president, no, nor does the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, nor does anybody. There was even a case of a soldier in the 1970s who was questioned. He was a high-ranking official, whether or not they could say no to Richard Nixon if Richard Nixon ever launched nuclear missiles. And for that, he was court-martialed, just for even asking the question. So the whole point is that if you're thinking there has to be somebody else, there doesn't. Now, you get into that 2 a.m., 3 a.m. scenario or 3 p.m. scenario. Now, the president of the United States of America decides, I'm going to launch nuclear missiles against Vladimir Putin because I've heard reports that he is launching missiles at us because the president's senile, and he orders a strike, and everybody's looking around going, we know the frigging guy is senile. What do we do? Those same people might be thinking, but what if he's having one of his lucid moments right now and we should do this? And other people may be thinking we shouldn't. But the people that are thinking we shouldn't are also probably thinking that they could be destroyed in nuclear Armageddon, or they could be court-martialed if they don't do what the president is ordering them to do. Because, you know, there's always the thing about, well, you know, president can't give an unlawful command. But launching nukes doesn't have that same ability in the sense of, is this an illegal order or not? Because it can't, because you can't have a debate, because you don't have time to have a debate. You know, there's a great scene in Oppenheimer, and I don't know how historically accurate that scene is, but there's a scene in Oppenheimer where Robert Oppenheimer goes into the Oval Office and meets with Harry Truman. And he says to President Truman that he regrets the fact that we used the nuclear missiles and or bombs, I should say, in Japan. And Truman pulls out a handkerchief and waves it at him and accuses Robert Oppenheimer of being a crybaby and says, you didn't make the decision to use these missiles or use these bombs. I did. I made this decision. Not you. I did. And he kicks him out of the Oval Office. Point being, you had a president who was senile. And the only guy who could launch nuclear missiles and make that decision with no ability lawfully for anybody to override him. And they kept him in charge as the commander in chief of the United States military the entire time. And I don't think we're paying enough attention to that. I don't think we're having enough conversations about that. You see, when Donald Trump was president, PBS with Judy Woodruff back then did a whole thing about this because they were all scared to death that Trump was going to lose his mind over a tweet and decide to launch nuclear missiles. I mean, Hillary Clinton ran on this. Hillary Clinton actually had, when she was running for president in 2016, I remember this commercial. She had a guy who was in one of the missile silos. That was his job. He worked for the Air Force, and he was one of the guys. And he was saying how Donald Trump is a threat. He's going to wind up causing global nuclear war, and we cannot rely on him, and he can't be president. So it's like 2017, 2018 or something, he's president. And then all of a sudden, there's all this renewed interest in the fact that there is no ability for anyone to say no to the president. And PBS NewsHour brings on this whole panel of experts, and they all give their opinions and their theories, but it all comes back to one crystal clear conclusion. No one can override the president. They could all think he's nuts for doing it, but they can't override him. And of course, there's scenarios whereby which they do, in which case then you have a coup. I mean, it's a coup d'etat. You've committed a coup against the president of the United States of America. And all of those people, if you're dealing with a president who's sane, would be subject to court-martial and potentially treason and could get the death penalty for committing treason against the United States of America because they did not follow the orders of the commander-in-chief in the chain of command under the command and control process that was established during the Cold War. Now, we could all sit here and argue, maybe, just maybe, Congress should revisit this, take a look at it. But until they do, it's the president's decision. And what I find interesting is that while Trump was president and they had all of these specials out and all these people and all these experts going on shows and everybody else, all these people, they were terrified of what Trump could do, but none of them said a word when Biden was president, nor are any of them saying a word now that Biden is not president. We're talking about auto pens, we're talking about executive orders, and all of that is good, and we should. But we're not talking about the fact that Joe Biden had the ability to destroy humanity, and they let him have that ability, or they didn't, and they took away the nuclear codes from him. And I was joking around with Jimmy Fallon earlier about this, and they gave him like a Fisher-Price nuclear codes, like I would give Reagan. Like Reagan has a Fisher-Price phone, you know? You remember this when you were kids, right? You push the buttons and everything, and you pretend to call. And kids are great with their imaginations. They can pretend anything is real. So when me and my daughter have tea parties, and we do tea parties all the time, we drink from our little teacups, and you know she thinks it's very real. And maybe they did with Joe Biden. Maybe they gave him fake nuclear codes, and maybe he would crack them open, and he'd give the command on his little Fisher-Price phone, and they'd go, uh-huh, we got you, Mr. President. But in which case, then, that's also really problematic for our country, that the commander-in-chief, they knew, did not have his mental faculties, and they took steps to protect America from a senile president who may think we're under attack and launch nuclear missiles. Or may launch nuclear missiles because he's had it with Vladimir Putin and just thinks that this is the end because he heard voices or he heard Harry Truman or he talked to Truman literally on the Truman balcony and Truman was telling him what it was like to drop the atomic bombs and Biden's like, let's unleash hell, whatever it is. And we're not talking about that. And that really bothers me because we can have all these conversations about Jill Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, who was absolutely, in my opinion, guilty of elder abuse against her husband. She left her husband in there because she loved flying in Air Force One and she loved being the first lady and she loved it all. And she knew he was senile and she knew he was dementia, but she had zero responsibility under the law or the Constitution to do anything about it. However, you can't say that about Kamala Harris. You can't say that about the Secretary of Defense or any of the other cabinet members. Because at some point, they realized, we realized as a country, that we need a mechanism to deal with a president who cannot do the job. And this is not a matter of impeachment, which is a quasi-criminal. I mean, it's not criminal in the sense of a criminal court, but, you know, that's a criminal matter. Through the eyes of Congress, high crimes, bribery, misdemeanors, et cetera. But how do you deal with a president who cannot do the job? Is it a coma, a stroke, lost his mind, is under anesthesia, whatever it is? And the 25th Amendment exists for that purpose so that the vice president can call the cabinet and say, we have a problem here. There's another great movie that I love called Air Force One with Harrison Ford. And again, I don't know how realistic that movie is, but it's fun. It's a lot of fun to watch. And there's a scene where Glenn Close plays the vice president and she has the cabinet in there. And the argument from, I think it's the Secretary of Defense in the movie, says the president is not acting like a president. He's making decisions as a father and a husband. And therefore, we need to remove him as president under the 25th Amendment. Now, it's way more dramatic in the movie. Because obviously there's a provision within the 25th Amendment for the president to take his power back, for Congress to give the power back to the president. There's fail safes within the 25th Amendment. But the movie is Hollywood. It's dramatic. And it ends with Harrison Ford obviously kicking the bad Secret Service agent who was the terrorist off the plane. You know, the famous line, get off my plane. And then the pilot saying that whatever the plane was has a new call sign. The call sign is now Air Force One because now the president is on the plane that they sent to rescue him. And whatever plane the president's on is Air Force One. And so she rips up the paper, the vote of the cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment against the president. And it's a big Hollywood ending and everybody's happy and, you know. But in real life, there's questions about when the president has to go and have serious surgery. So we all remember when President Reagan was shot. We remember that Vice President George H.W. Bush was on Air Force One. We remember the famous issue with Alexander Haig coming to the White House podium and saying that he was in charge. And there was this whole question about who is in charge. Is it the vice president? Because they had not invoked the 25th Amendment after the president was shot. He was obviously getting major surgery and had to be under serious anesthesia because you can't operate on a man who's just been shot without anesthesia. That would be just very, very cruel. They didn't really know. And there were all these opinions back and forth. The attorney general gets involved. And the point being, though, that was a couple of hours. That was one day. Reagan was shot. One day he's under anesthesia, he's getting surgery. But at that moment, they realized we have to figure out this process because we need to be able to have a system in place for if the president is unreachable, if the president is incapacitated, and we don't have time to bring the cabinet together and do the 25th Amendment and do the whole process. So who becomes in charge? Who takes the command authority? And this became an issue during 9/11, obviously. With Joe Biden, they had plenty of time. They had all the time in the world. They had years. They had months. They had all the time to do what the Constitution, in my opinion, required, which was for them to remove him as president of the United States. And as all these books come out now and they tell us how Joe Biden had dementia and Joe Biden was senile and Joe Biden didn't recognize his national security advisor and Joe Biden didn't know what was going on and who was alive and who was dead, nothing changed insofar as what the law empowers him to do, which is to launch nuclear weapons. And maybe someday somebody will write a book about how close we came. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe not. But we can't even get the truth on Jeffrey Epstein. But at no point did they ever assemble the cabinet and say, we have to deal with this fact, right? We got to deal with the fact that even though he's the president and even though we think Joe Biden is the only guy that has a chance of beating Donald Trump, he's senile and he's the commander in chief. And what happens if something goes wrong and this guy's got to make a decision? And maybe they had a meeting and they decided, OK, in that case, then we won't do anything unless the vice president signs off, or we won't do anything unless the Secretary of Defense signs off. But that's not how it's supposed to be. And for good reason, because in those crucial moments you have, there's no time for debate. So what would have happened theoretically if Joe Biden was having one of his lucid moments and we were under attack and Joe Biden ordered the missiles to be deployed and Kamala Harris said no and the Secretary of Defense said no and we lost and the Soviet Union or Russia won or China won or whatever scenario? Because they didn't think he was up to making that decision. And there's a reason why we don't allow other people to get involved in the chain of command on that, because we can't have time for a debate. And we, as Americans, have to trust that we've elected the person who will do the job and make the right call in the right moment. And that guy could not make the right call in any moment. Literally, not even with the Easter Bunny, who we thought was real. So I want us to focus on this, and I'm glad that Comer's bringing all these people in. And what I would like is for Republicans to start having those conversations, because this is bad. This is really bad. You know, it's easy to look back in hindsight and go, well, nothing bad happened, so therefore, come on, Zeoli, you're being dramatic. But am I?
Speaking of nukes and how terrifying it is to contemplate who has their finger on the button, know that Iran has continued to advance its nuclear program. And that is raising concerns about its potential to develop nuclear weapons. And what are we going to do about it? Tommy Tucker at WWL Radio tackles that next.
How close are they, do we know, to a nuclear weapon?
You know, it's very, and I'm not a scientist, right? But you're allowed to enrich uranium to a certain point for nuclear energy. And Iran, you know, wants nuclear energy that helps them save some of the oil and gas they produce for export and make money off of that. And they have increased it. And there are various estimates that said if there was no deal and they went full bore on this, they could enrich enough uranium to get to the point that it's what's called weapons grade. From there, you still got to figure out how to put it into missiles and all those sorts of things. But let's just say that if they wanted to and there was no agreement, within a year or two, they could have a nuclear weapon.
For people that don't understand, and that's also why I mentioned I printed out the agreement and got the stink eye from the business manager because I used so much paper and so much printer cartridge. They talked about uranium in there and enriched uranium, and people think it's either like a light switch on or off, and that is hardly the case when it comes to uranium and weapons-grade stuff, right, Bruce?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. That's why when the deal was struck in 2015, it wasn't like, okay, we got a deal. You had, you know, procedures and agreements on, checking on how things were going. And there's an international agency called the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, that most people in the world think is a pretty well-functioning international agency. And they would go in and they would check on things and there'd be cameras and everything. And, you know, you kind of a little bit of cat and mouse. But The details of these things are so complicated. That's why you needed so much paper, you know, because it's not just you will do this and you won't do that. You got to get into all the technical details, which is why when President Trump announces, hey, we're going to have a deal in 2 days, you almost worry that if they had a deal that he would say could give him a win in a news cycle, it wouldn't have the details fit and then it would fall apart. It could be worse than no deal at all.
Where do the Russians and the Chinese stand now? Because back in 2015, we were working together to keep Iran from having a nuclear weapon because nobody thought that would be a good idea, right? Where do they stand now with?
You know, I think it's fair to say that neither of them wants Iran to have nuclear weapons because there are only, say, 8 or 9 countries in the world that have nuclear weapons: Russia, China, us, Israel, India, Pakistan, France, Britain. You know, and there's a certain amount of status to that. But right now they see it as our problem. You know, there are so many differences between us and Russia and China that it's like, Trump, you've created a problem for yourself. You know, you deal with it. Israelis, you deal with it. And even the U.S. and Israel may not be on the same page on this now. So they're not really willing to work with us on this because there are so many other things that we've had antagonisms. I mean, you know, with Russia, it's been their invasion of Ukraine. And with China, a whole bunch of other issues. So it's like, problem on your plate politically and otherwise, you know, we'll kind of keep an eye on it and maybe get involved at some later date.
So when it comes to nuclear weapons and we talk about, you know, who has them and who doesn't, what kind of, I don't know how if you would use an index, Bruce, to describe it, or what level of nuclear weapon Iran could develop. And then you got the delivery system on top of it. Compare and contrast to, I don't think they'd be anywhere near close to the Austria or the Chinese or Russia. I don't know, maybe more along the lines of Britain, Pakistan? I don't know. Tell me.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a threat to us. It would really be a threat to Israel. And interestingly, Tommy, you know, for a long time, you know, Iran and Saudi Arabia, one, you know, Sunni Muslim and the other Shia Muslim, you know, had deep antagonisms. And the Saudis were almost as concerned about Iranian nuclear weapons as the Israelis. Saudi Arabia and Iran have actually started some diplomatic relations over the last 2-3 years. And by the way, the ones that helped them get started were the Chinese, not us. Mm. And so the notion right now of, you know, Saudis are feeling much less worried about this. They don't want it to happen, but they're not pushing us that, you know, you got to go bomb them if they don't make a deal. It's really about Israel's security. And Israel has a genuine basis for fearing Iranian nuclear weapons. But right now, I think, you know, Israel has so many problems. The former Ehud Olmert, who's the former prime minister of Israel, of the same political party as Netanyahu, wrote a scathing article in an Israeli newspaper earlier this week about what Netanyahu is doing in Gaza and everywhere else in the world that's hurting Israel more than anybody else. So it's really more an Israel-Iran, somewhat U.S. issue right now.
To wrap us up today, Bob Rose at WSKY Radio will reveal new concerns about Chinese nationals potentially engaging in espionage activities targeting U.S. military personnel and government employees.
Has U.S. military service members and government employees in the crosshairs of its overseas spy operations? Jin Zhao and Li Tian, both active-duty Army soldiers, arrested in early March after allegedly selling top-secret information to individuals based in China, according to the DOJ. They are both indicted by federal grand juries in Washington and Oregon. The prosecutors alleged that Tian sold sensitive military information to former soldier Ruoyu Duan, who had allegedly received money from individuals residing in China. All right, so the point of at least me bringing this story up now, part of it is, oh, so you want to question whether or not we should allow Chinese nationals to come and be educated in our universities. Well, if China is very active in their little spy game, then that, to me, that is reason enough. Say, oh, no. Mm-hmm. We know what you're doing. You're targeting some of our military folks who happen to be, you know, Chinese. So it goes exactly to what I've said many times. When the Chinese Communist Party calls on you, you will answer the call if you're from China.
Yeah, no is not a possible answer.
It's not even part of the language.
That explains why.
No, it could be.
It could.
But anyway, so a very, very serious thing. And if this is, they caught them, but they believe that, oh, no, they are targeting all kinds of military folks and trying to get them to spy.
This
again.
This would come into play of your code of not shocked.
Yes.
Not a bit.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why you've got to be supportive of vetting heavily or not letting in at all Chinese nationals for a period of time. What did we have at one time? I think 300,000 on student visas, something like that.
Okay, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, and they don't they don't respect trademarks, things like that.
No.
Yeah. So anyway, I wanted to share that story with you. Obviously, that information is top secret. Could be very damaging.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.